Hello and welcome to the premiere podcast of LRM Online. I'm your host, Brandon Jones, and this week, Jammer and I sit down with actress Lindsay Rousseau and we talk about the latest Justice League controversy, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles reboot, Amazon's Fallout series, and Lindsay's starring role in the upcoming Netflix and Rooster Teeth produced Transformers: The War for Cybertron. All this and more on Breaking Geek Radio, the podcast, and it's coming at you right now.
Cybertron is in ruins. I fear war is lost. Optimus, at this moment we must focus on surviving as a race, not winning a war.
Yet again, the Autobots have escalated this conflict to the point where we must answer their aggression with force. I empower you, Decepticons, to bring this painful chapter of our history to a close.
So, first off, again, Lindsay, thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate having you here on Breaking Geek Radio, the podcast.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
Sure, too easy. And today we're going to be joined by Jammer.
Yo.
How's it going?
It goes. It has been a week of interesting stuff, controversy,
yes, it has.
And exhaustion just because actually I'm moving soon. So I have boxes all over the place. If I sound a little more echoey than normal, it's because I got rid of all of the, well, the things that make my office a little more sound good. I can't speak. It makes me sound better. Sound better. It makes me sound better. Okay. Less echoey. That's it. That stuff is mostly gone.
That's how you messed up, because what you should have done was stack the boxes around you.
And all those moving blankets are perfect for making your own home studio.
Yeah, but I'm lazy, though. So forces combined. And also my cats are annoying. They like to knock things over constantly. My cat was super smart the other day. So he likes to open closet doors. And I put a picture frame in front of the closet so he can't move it, and he went and freaking knocked over the picture frame, then went over to the end and opened the door. I'm like, I hate you, stupid cat. But it was adorable. So,
and I'm not going to tolerate your animal abuse on the show. Okay, that's just it's not appropriate.
Sorry,
call your cat's name.
I have two cats myself, and they do like to push into closets.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right. So we're going to talk about some news topics today. There are some things that happened this week that are pretty interesting in the world of entertainment. We're just going to jump right into it. So one of the biggest ones that I think that happened this week was the story that came out between Ray Fisher and Joss Whedon. Or actually, it was a little bit more one-sided than that. And Ray Fisher, you know, sent out a tweet that went viral, and he accused Joss Whedon, the director of the Justice League, of abusive and unprofessional behavior on the set of that movie. He also said that Jeff Johns and...
John Berg.
Thank you. Abled Joss Whedon's behavior on the set. So that tweet went viral. And basically, Ray Fisher had previously said that, you know, Joss Whedon was the right man for this job, that he was the perfect person to pick up from Zack Snyder and direct this film. And the way that the tweet went viral is that he retweeted that and said, you know, I would like to emphatically retract this statement. And so that's what followed these accusations. Jammer, what do you think about that?
I mean, I thought it was interesting because that first tweet came days before the follow-up tweet. So the first tweet he said, like, I'd like to forcibly, whatever the word is, retract that statement. And he attached it to a video from San Diego Comic-Con. I think it was July 2017, roughly a month before the movie came out, Justice League. And yeah, saying he's, you know, he thinks Zach picked a great guy to, you know, finish the movie. And then, he added, yeah, I like to forcibly retract that, which I thought was really weird because I thought maybe at first that, oh, the Snyder cut is coming eventually. So maybe it's like he didn't like the creative direction, but it felt a little bit antagonistic for it to just be about that. But I kind of brushed it off and moved on with my life. And then a couple days later, he posted those really, you know, gross, abusive, unprofessional behavior on set. And I was like, oh, interesting. It wasn't just about like the creative direction. It was just like as a human being and as a professional, it's very clear he has no respect for him. He didn't delve into the reasons why, there were some comments and rumors that revolved around what's her name? Gal Gadot. Her having a problem with the scene and him yelling and saying that he would ruin her career if she didn't do it or something. And there was another rumor that popped up from that saying that the scene in question was the one where Flash fell and kind of fell into her breasts and popped back up, you know. Aha, hearty har, fun stuff. That he actually did that in Age of Ultron with Mark Ruffalo and Scarlett Johansson. So it was like a repeat joke. But no confirmation that was the scene. But it is note that we don't see her face when she's laying down. So that supposedly it was a stunt double. But again, that is unconfirmed. Fisher himself did not specify what the actual incident was. Doesn't sound great for Joss Whedon. I've heard rumors as well that he's not necessarily the nicest guy all the time, but I don't know. It's hard for me to know because we don't have enough information, but obviously if it's true that he was like spouting off stuff like that, I personally have no respect for directors that do that kind of stuff. But that's how I feel. I think if he's calling him out and if it was actually abusive behavior, get him out of there. I guess he's not really doing much these days, but still.
Right. Well, now they're talking about bringing in another director and reviving the idea for the Cyborg spinoff. I think they've been talking to J.D. Dillard as possibly helming the new Cyborg spinoff, which has so far been stalled out. And this would be the time to bring in a replacement.
Yeah, like that movie was supposed to come out 2019, I think. So it sounds a long time ago, but that was just last year. I remember back years ago, one of my old co-hosts said, like, that movie is never coming out. So we'll see what happens with that, if it ever happens at all. But yeah, that would be, I guess it's the thing, though, is that for me, it doesn't seem like Fisher, people go like, I'm weirded out by the timing. I'm like, what timing? They're like, oh, he's upset because he was cut out of Justice League. And I'm like, he's getting a Zack Snyder cut where he's guaranteed more screen time.
Yeah,
like,
and Zack Snyder has said he's the heart of the film and was not happy with Joss Whedon's cut because of that. Yeah.
So like the fact that I'm like, there's no, for me, no motivation for him to do this. And it's not like, I don't think it would make it easier for him to, you know, actually get that movie, the Cyborg movie going forward. If anything, it would make it more difficult. I don't see any motivation for him to do this without reason, or at least without reason. So like personally, I am more inclined to believe him, but at the same time, you know, obviously I don't have enough information just yet, but that's just kind of where I'm leaning as of right now, based on the limited stuff that we have. So what about you? What do you think, Lindsay?
I mean, this is indicative of what's been going on over the past couple of weeks with the Black Lives Matter movement. It's what I think started with the Me Too movement and the Time's Up movement, is that people are finally feeling like they have a space to come forward and air those grievances. And I think that he is feeling like he can come forward and say something now because Hollywood has opened up to making those conversations more acceptable and not worrying that he's going to tank his career by doing so. I mean, John Boyega gave a very impassioned speech at a protest in London several weeks ago, basically saying, I don't care if I never act again. I don't care if speaking out ruins my career, but I have to speak out about the abuses going on. And Lucasfilm was like 100% behind him. So I think, you know, he feels like if I'm going to say something, now's the time to say it, because people are much more open to hearing and believing what people have to say when it comes to abuse. And they're no longer just believing the people in power, the status quo and so forth. So, I mean, good for him, because I'm sure he's not the only one who has complaints.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I've heard things in the past, and yeah, there have been complaints about Whedon in general, you know, his, I guess, infidelity and all that stuff, which personally it's awful, but I'm not sure that qualifies for, I don't know, inappropriate behavior. I don't know. I don't know the specifics of that, but like, it's just infidelity and just not like, I guess what the thing was feminist is like, oh, you can't be a feminist if you're infidel or infidel, that's not the right word, if you're not faithful or whatever. And I'm like, I'm not sure those are mutually exclusive.
I feel like that's a different, yeah, I feel like those are two separate conversations.
Yeah, so to me, like, yeah, you can be all for women's rights and still be, you know, a cheating dick.
I'm like, I'm pretty sure women cheat on, you know, partners as well. I mean, right. So yeah,
So like, I want to make sure that, you know, when I'm thinking about like, it's not just through that lens, because I know a lot of people, because of that a couple of years ago, were like ready to jump on, you know, oh, I believe it because of that. I'm like, well, those are different conversations. I am willing to believe it for sure. I would like to know information. Obviously, I don't, no one cares about what I think or what most of us think. I just want to make sure that whoever is in power has the information necessary to make the decision, and hopefully the right decision based on, you know, corroborating evidence and all that, and are able to, like, for lack of a better term, bring him to justice to make sure that that doesn't happen again to anybody. Because I don't think that's an atmosphere anybody wants to work in.
I just want you to know that was the lamest pun ever. Bring him to justice. Yeah. Really?
You know what I mean? That was that's a lack of a better term. That came to my head.
Sure it did.
But yeah, it's just, I think that's great that it seems more and more that we are getting to this place where there are fewer assholes in power. I'm sure there's plenty, but fewer people, abusive people, maybe that's a better word. Fewer abusive people in power, and the people who are making their way up are more, less egotistical, and less willing to sort of cast people aside on a whim for whatever reason. And I think that's a good thing. We hope. Once again, we don't know for sure. But that's the hope.
I don't know.
At least people are having the conversations, which is something,
right.
You know, and, you know, a week or so ago, news broke that, you know, a lot of the top agencies are hiring PR firms and private investigators to dig into their clients' Twitter histories and their backgrounds to make sure, you know, people haven't made racist and misogynistic statements in social media. So there's a lot of conversations happening right now in the industry to try and hold people accountable. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think, Jones? Did you say your opinion on all this? I don't think you have.
No, I didn't. I think I'm more in the camp of, so the things that you talked about, Jammer, are separate issues to me about, you know, whether or not he has issues with his wife and all those other things. I hadn't heard the thing about Wonder Woman, but I typically lean more towards a person who would like more corroboration. So I don't think there's enough information to say one way or the other, right? We're just, I think it's perfectly okay to say, I don't know when it comes to this kind of stuff, because we weren't there. And, but just in my head, I always lean towards more corroboration. That's just my training. It's hard to divorce myself from that thought process. And so part of what happened with me was that initial tweet. So just like you said, everything that happened, that kind of made the story blow up happened later. And his initial statement about, I would like to emphatically retract this, it stuck out more to me like, I thought of wrestling, like when I was a kid, like Saturday morning wrestling. Like this feels like something that, you know, Hulk Hogan would say to Macho Man Randy Savage. And I didn't know that it wasn't a joke. I didn't know that this wasn't like playing to the crowd. You know, the fact that this is a more serious accusation kind of makes you take a step back and wonder who else from the production feels this way. And I just thought it was interesting. I had never heard anything like this about him.
Me neither. I've heard like he's not sometimes like not the nicest. And I've heard also, you know, the more personal stuff, but I haven't heard anything about like unprofessional onset behavior or anything like that, or abusive. I haven't heard that. But you never know.
And he's since the 80s.
Right. And I do think I want to point to a comment from our co-host who isn't here, Nick Dahl. He said something on Twitter, and I'm calling him out, and he's not going to be able to defend himself. Sorry. I could do whatever I damn well please. No, he said like he's not going to believe it until characters or actors from the Avengers movies come out. And I'm like, okay, well, first of all, I don't think that's... That's weird for me to hear that, because I'm like, okay, well, first, you don't know if it's just maybe this movie where he was acting that way, or if it was consistent behavior or what. Like, you don't necessarily know if maybe he was just having a bad week or a bad day or whatever. Not that it excuses it, but it, just because it didn't happen in one movie doesn't necessarily mean it didn't happen ever. And I just saying like, oh, him saying, I'm only going to believe it if these actors from these movies corroborate something. And say something. Yeah, I just think I don't think that's the way to get to the center of it. But I prefer, you know, corroboration on Justice League set, preferably involving the same incident. But if there are more incidents, that's also a thing that should happen. I think that's a better way to go about solving that problem. I know even Alan Tudyk, who is a, you know, he was on Firefly and is a Joss Whedon vet. Yeah, he defended Joss Whedon, saying like he can't imagine that behavior from Whedon. So take that from what you will. Take from that.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about gathering all the evidence that's available to you. And, you know, there's like you mentioned, there's a difference between being an asshole and being abusive. And some people are obviously more sensitive to certain things, and there is some behavior that's never acceptable. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You have to have all the information available before you can pass judgment in either direction, either the victim or the survivor or the potential abuser.
Right. Right. So we'll see what happens. I think we will get more information on this. It did seem, it seemed a little meditative that we got a tweet a few days ago and then another tweet a few days later. It just seems like maybe there's more to come. I don't know if he's like dripping out the information little by little to kind of gauge reaction, or if that's kind of as far as he's going to go. But I would be surprised if that's the last we heard of it. But, you know, who knows? Yeah, that's all I have to say.
All right. Finn. Folks, ready to move on?
I am, unless you guys have anything else to add.
I do not.
Nope.
Okay. So, next bit of news we have coming out is the fact that there is another Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles reboot coming out, except this one is going to be coming from Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen, so the guys behind Sausage Party. And I think, Jammer, you have a little bit more information about some of why this might be a little bit more interesting. But I think that the thing that makes this interesting to me is that this is going to be directed by Jeff Rowe, who worked on Gravity Falls. And I really enjoyed that show. That was a lot of fun for me, that show, even though it's relatively new and I wasn't a kid when it came out, it was still fun to watch. And so, you know, bringing Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg and Rowan there, I think that pedigree has the potential to do something better than what's been done in the last few years. So, Lindsay, you said before that, you know, you were really excited for this. So.
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, first of all, it's going to be animated. Well, CGI. You know, they're doing it for Nickelodeon, which I have a soft spot for the original Ninja Turtles, both the animated series. And I even loved the live action movie that came out in the 90s. I won't lie. I enjoyed it. But the animated series really has a special place in my heart. And when you try to, like, make something that's, you know, iconic for its humor, to try and make that kind of a grittier, darker, story, I just felt like didn't work. And I mean, I love Seth Rogen. I love a lot of the guys who are signed on for this reboot. And it'll be interested to see the style of animation that they do for it. Because, I mean, so far they're just saying that it's going to be a CGI project, which could be a wide range of things. It could be more animation, you know, stylized, or it could be more realistic, I guess, because with technology. But because it is being done for Nickelodeon, I feel like that's a good indicator of at least what the humor is going to be. And so I think, you know, and it's going to be Nick's first CG production. I mean, this animated movie is going to be the first one.
Is it really? I'll be very excited.
Apparently. Well, yeah, at least according to the internet, it'll be their first ever CG production produced by Nickelodeon Animation Studios.
That's pretty cool.
You know, everything on the internet is true.
It is
true. And now it's all true. It's all 100%. 100%.
I think one of the things that you just said that made me think of something else, Lindsay, was the fact that what style of animation they would use. I started thinking of Into the Spider-Verse, given that this is a property that draws its roots out of the comic. I mean, it's a comic book property.
Yes.
It would be interesting to see if they tried that to make it a little bit more pulpy, the way that's Into the Spider-Verse did. That would be really fun to see.
That would be cool.
That would be very interesting.
I think,
Jammer, what do you?
This is exciting because I do also, I think my favorite, I'm saying this slowly to scan because I'm trying to scan my memory for the other things that I've seen Ninja Turtle related. I mean, I do have a soft spot in my heart for the live action movies and from the 90s, as well as the animated show from the 80s. I think it bled into the 90s. I don't remember.
It did. Well, and then even the reboot that came out a couple years ago, which still had several of the original cast members in it, was also very well done, I think.
Yeah, I only saw the first one. I thought it was enjoyable. I thought they had some good moments with the dynamic of the turtles. Wasn't a fan of the design of the turtles, but overall.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
I think they did capture their relationships pretty well, even if the movies themselves, or actually, I've only seen the first one. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I heard the second one wasn't that great. I actually didn't see it myself. But I liked also the 2007 animated movie that came out from Kevin Monroe.
Yeah, that's the Warner Brothers
one. I think that's who it was. Was that the Warner Brothers? I enjoyed that one. I thought that was interesting. I recently watched it again, or I watched most of it. It doesn't hold up as well as I thought it would, but I think it's okay. I think it's pretty good. And I think, but I do like the way the design of the turtles were. And I would be okay with a style that is somewhat similar to that. Maybe I would be cool if it, yeah, they did go the pulpier route as a, you know, as Spider-Verse stuff, but that might be derivative. Who knows if they do that? That might just seem a little bit cheap, but you never know. They could do something really well since they did originate in comic form, like, you know, the black and white comics. That would be cool, mm-hmm. if they somehow incorporated that style and aesthetic. That'd be awesome. I would love to see that. But another interesting aspect to this is that Sausage Party, back when it first came out, ran into some controversy because that movie was made for less than $20 million, which is nothing for an animated movie. And the reason why, supposedly, according to a lot of people online, once again, everything on the internet is true, but I do think this was corroborated at the time, because this was 4 years ago at this point, because the directors would demand people work overtime for free, and there was just a lot of stuff. Like, over 30 animators left during the course of production due to stress and expectations. Most of them left before paid and overtime was implemented. This was met with animosity and was taken as a personal insult to the owners. Their names were omitted from the final credits despite working on the film for over a year. They went on to say over half the animation team was not credited. The team behind this film poured their hearts and souls into this, blah, 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 blah. So Nitrogen Studios. Do we know if Nitrogen Studios is the one behind this or if it's a new one?
It doesn't say it, at least in this article that I'm reading here. It's saying Nickelodeon, Viacom.
Okay.
Paramount has distribution. I'm not seeing Nitrogen anywhere.
Okay.
But obviously, this is early days.
Right. Okay. So we don't know for sure what the involvement is there, but I guess it's just the Goldberg and Rogan involvement just kind of piqued my spidey senses. And hopefully that doesn't happen again. And based on what I'm seeing here, it doesn't look like they're involved. Looks like they were involved in the Addams Family movie that just came out. So they're not involved. So maybe that will be a non-problem here. But it was just something that was interesting to me, and hopefully they don't have that. But I guess they have bigger. For me, Sausage Party seemed like it was mostly an indie movie, whereas this feels like it's very much corporate backed. So,
oh yeah, if it's Nick Animation, they've got the full power of all of their, you know, production and all of their animators, you know. So yeah.
So my interesting point is no longer interesting because it doesn't look like it's going to be having the same, you know, issues. So never mind. What do you think about this, Jonesy?
Think about what? The crunch issues or the
movie?
I already said.
Oh, I don't remember.
That's where we got the design of the Into the Spider-Verse and what this might look like. And we talked about this. I said, okay, so I will add another thing. I will say I'm a fan of the version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that came out in 2012 and ran, I think, until 17. And that's a Nickelodeon production. That was pretty good. Like, I felt like they did a good job of getting the characters and relationships right. It got a little weird when it went to space. Spoiler for a three-year-old show. But if they put that much effort into that, then I'm perfectly comfortable with, you know, the folks overseeing this. So I'm kind of excited about that.
Do you think they should adopt any specific style? Like, how would you design the turtles? Would they be big or small?
Small.
Not tiny, but small. I mean, like, skinnier.
Yeah, smallish. Smaller than humans.
Because they're pretty big, even, like, in all the live-action movies, they're pretty big. Like, if you were to, yeah, you were, I don't, give like me, the, like, a height. Give me a height and width. I want to hear your vision of the size of the turtles.
No taller than 5'9".
Okay, so like smaller, diminutive-ish.
Yeah, so like a stocky, like a stocky adult.
I like how I said diminutive as if 5'9 is tiny. I'm shorter than that. What am
I was going to say, are we talking like dwarf sizes?
I think in my head I was thinking 4'9, and I don't know why I thought that was just like, never mind. Don't worry about it. We're good.
So they basically, if they could tower over you and beat you up, that's what I'm going for. I think that 5'8 is because I'm not tall. Depending on what shoes I wear, I'm 6 feet tall, 5'11, 6 feet. And I feel like if something like that walked up to me, even if it's shorter than me, being as broad and muscular as they're supposed to be, that would be sufficiently intimidating without having them be like the tank size that they were in those previous live action movies that came out. So I like that. And the thing that I think that size gets you towards is the ninja element of their names, right? So they're really stealthy, being like ginormous shells. And so I like, you know, the shorter than me size, because I think it's, you know, it goes back to, I think Hobbs and Shaw is a terrible movie, but I do love that scene where Jason Statham says to The Rock, like, this is a stealth mission. Look at you. Like, you're huge. You're ginormous. So I like that. And so hopefully they get that part right as well.
I really wanted to like Hobbs and Shaw. That movie looked so much fun. I wanted it to be better. Hopefully the sequel gets better.
Stop that. You stop that. I do.
I have no more thoughts. All right.
All right, so moving on. So this is the last story we're going to cover. And, you know, Lindsay, we got this one especially for you. So it looks like Lisa Joy and Jonathan Nolan's production company, Kilter Studios, is going to be coming out with a Fallout show. And so it's going to run on Amazon Prime. And I don't think that there are really too many other details other than that.
As of right now. And they're developing, so it'll probably appear in 2023 or something, or 2024.
And that Bethesda will be involved, so it's not like they just sold the rights to the franchise. It looks like Bethesda's going to have a hand in the creation of the show, which is always encouraging.
Yeah. Right. And so the reason why we got this is because you have worked on a Fallout game before. So I'd like you to, you know, tell me how you feel about this project. Are you going to lobby to be in it? And all that other good stuff.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I mean, you know, obviously it's the guys who brought us Westworld, guys and gals who brought us Westworld. So they are very adept at knowing how to deal with a sprawling franchise and how to world build. I mean, obviously Bethesda's done the heavy lifting of creating this just vast, immersive, detailed world for us. And I mean, maybe it's too soon for people to be talking about a dystopian future, but I think it has, you know, it's been so successful, besides the fact that, yes, I was in Fallout 76, which has not fared as well with the critics as the other Fallout franchises have. I think it's just got a huge fan base, and it's just so rich for storytelling that I think there's a lot of potential there. I'm very excited to see what these guys do with it. And I'm so stoked.
I think I'm more excited for its style than anything else, because it has a very, very distinguishing sort of aesthetic and feel to it. And just bringing that into like a show would be really cool. Just it's sort of glossy / old feeling.
Right.
Type world. It's really cool looking.
That's why I feel like the Westworld creators are probably perfect for this, because they knew how to perfectly mingle, you know, the classic feel with advanced technology. So, you know, it's not just the dark grittiness of like a Walking Dead, or, you know, the shiny sci-fi-ness of you know, Blade Runner or Altered Carbon or something. So I feel like, you know, this could be, and it's interesting that they're adding this when they also have Lord of the Rings in development as well. Yes. So now we're going to be seeing Amazon with these two major franchises, that are very different feels. So it looks like they're really just like diving in 100% with, you know, developing shows that just have massive world building already created for them and could literally go anywhere and go on for years and years and years without ever feeling redundant or like they're repeating a storyline. I mean, you could follow completely different groups of people each season if you wanted to. It could take place in a different time period and still be in that same universe.
It just reminds me of kind of what Walking Dead's doing. And I'm just imagining like Fear the Fallout is like the spin-off people or something like that. But it's just, I agree with you as far as them having these giant franchises. That crossed my mind as well. Because, yeah, Lord of the Rings is going to be huge, presumably. And yeah, my biggest criticism, I think, of Netflix over the years has been that despite how long they've been around, with the exception of maybe Stranger Things and The Witcher, as far as like franchises, they don't really have much of anything. And
I think they tried to do that with Altered Carbon. And I loved season one of Altered Carbon. I was so excited for it. And I won't lie, I watched the first episode of season two and I was done. I was like, nope, it's not. It just didn't have the same feel for me as season one. And I think they were trying to go with that world building, jumping time periods and things like that. And so now I think they're just digging in hard with The Witcher. And obviously that's based on books, so the heavy lifting's already done for them. You know, I'm reading through all The Witcher books right now, and he's got plenty of fodder for Netflix to build on for years and years to come.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One question I do have for, actually not, it wasn't even a question, it was a comment. I think the thing that excites me the most, oddly enough, is the music. And I think it's very easy to look and feel, not easy, but it's already done for you, right? The look and feel of this world are already exist. And so just adapt that. Music is difficult a lot of times because of licensing issues or and things like that. But
yeah, but if Bethesda's involved in the production, they should already be able to, I mean, obviously you'd have to develop new contracts because it's a different medium, right? But you know, if they're able to bring over their creative team, including the composers, and I will say, like, I think, you know, video game composers are some of the best composers of our generation. I mean, you know, you look at Fallout, you look at the Elder Scrolls and Skyrim and just all of these massive, and they're scoring hundreds of hours of music, and it just, you can't have a game without it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're so good. And I remember, yeah, I know licensing can be a real, real thorn in the side, because what was it? Dragon Quest XI, where for PS4, they decided the US release would only have the MIDI version, because the composer had some rights to orchestration, or I don't know what it was, but it was really weird. And it wasn't until the Switch version that they actually allowed the actual orchestrated version that was in the original Japanese game to come to the US. And it was just so bizarre. Like, why would you, like, it sounded bad in MIDI. And I'm like, come on, just give us the orchestration version. I'm happy they did. But yeah, I know, like, music is just one of those things that can just be a pain.
So you look at the Tony Hawk remake that they're doing. So I think it's 1 and 2 that they're doing for that. And one of the key points in their advertisement is like, we got all of the songs, because the music for that game fills so much of the identity.
They got Goldfinger Superman in there.
they got it all, Jammer. You want some Tony Hawk music? They got it all. And so for me, Fallout is that same way, where, you know, you've got some Chuck Berry and some stuff like that, and like Eddie Cochran, and the creepiness with which the lo-fi versions of that music played as you were just like wandering through this desolate place. I'm hoping they're able to somehow make you still feel that. So I'm excited for the project, because like Lindsay said, the Westworld, I've enjoyed Westworld. And so if they're able to bring over that creative passion, plus Bethesda is able to bring over everything that they're able to do, I think that this could be a real treat. And I think it's one that a lot of people wouldn't necessarily see coming. I think it's easy to sit here and say like Lord of the Rings is going to be a success, or some other big franchise or big property, but I don't think that Fallout exists in the zeitgeist the same way. Like, there are a lot of people like us that know it. Jammer, you haven't even played it.
Nope. I just know what it looks like. It looks pretty.
Right. And so I think that this is a real opportunity to do something different. And when I say different, I don't mean different from, just different from what we as an audience have seen on TV. And that's exciting. So
I like the way that Lisa Joy and Jonathan Nolan phrase their comment. Fallout is one of the greatest games of all time. Each chapter of this insanely imaginative story has cost us countless hours we could have spent with family and friends.
As we can say for so many video games.
Yep, absolutely. It's so fun. Like the torn issue where I'm just like, I could play a video game or I can hang out with my wife, I guess. It's
I guess
it's a decision. It's one or the other. It's like
it's compromises. It's all about compromise.
It is. I mean, there's a reason I usually get maybe in like 30 minutes to an hour of gaming a week if I'm lucky. But yeah, it's just interesting. Yeah, just the whole cost benefit situation there is very real.
Right.
Unless you're with someone who plays video games, which my wife, she plays Animal Crossing, and is that it? She had another game she likes Parkitect in The Sims and those types of games.
She likes jobs. She doesn't like games. She likes jobs.
Second work. Yeah. She likes feeling like she's in control of something in this terrible time. That's what she likes.
Yeah, I feel like I'm the only person who hasn't jumped on the Animal Crossing bandwagon. Like everybody I know is playing it. I was like, it's just not my thing. It's just not for me.
That reminds me of the one game, Papers, Please, where you play a border agent, and you basically, it's another job where you literally just check their passport and their documents, and then you stamp them or you don't. That's it. That is the game. And it's just another job. Like, I think that was the first game I realized this is just work. Like, they're just giving me work to do, but that's okay because it's fun.
Lindsay, do you have a Switch?
I don't. I know, right? Oh. No, I don't. I'm strictly a console person. I almost bought one off of a friend when this whole quarantine first happened because I was like, oh, maybe I'll have all this free time. And I honestly haven't had the free time I thought
you
I was going to have.
All these people say,
I don't know how people are
time.
Bored. I'm like, yeah. I took on some new projects during the quarantine. I was like, oh, I'm going to produce a D&D channel now. And, you know, and obviously being a voice actor, I'm able to still work from home because I have a home studio. I'm writing more, but it's like, I had all these grand plans of like just sitting around and playing all these video games, and it has not happened.
We were good at filling time with busy work or just work in general.
I need to stay busy. That's just kind of my thing. So yeah, exactly.
Okay. So what else was I gonna say? You know, this is not related in any way, shape, or form, but this makes me want there to be a Portal series.
Because
I think Portal has such a really specific style and tone.
With robots or with like the test subject?
Probably a test subject, because I think the robots, that would just be like a series of Pixar shorts or something. Like, I feel like that would be engaging for a long form series. Sure, you can.
Why not both? Your answer is supposed to say all of it. I want it all.
All of it. Just yes. Yes to all of it. Because that game is so funny and smart and narratively driven that I think it's easily adaptable for like, I guess a movie would probably be better for Portal, to be honest. Maybe a series. I don't know. Or maybe even just like a well-made web series of some sort. What?
I said 10-minute shorts. That's what I'll give
you. Yeah, 10-minute shorts. Like something could be done, like a narrative sort of experience. Mm-hmm. And I know that Dan Trachtenberg, the guy behind 10 Cloverfield Lane, did a short that I thought was interesting on it that was inspired by it. But yeah, I want to see another one like that because there's just... Of all of the a lot of projects out there, I just feel like that one just felt like it could be adapted pretty well. Obviously, you don't necessarily have the same emphasis on puzzles, which I guess that takes away an element of it. But whenever you're switching from a video game to a standard narrative medium, it's like you're losing an element there. So I don't think that's anything different from normal.
Okay. It's a Portal. You know, but it kills my segue into Lindsay's work. But you know what? I'm glad you got that off your chest. It's super important.
Yeah, I did. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. I have to point it out. I just have to say these things to you so you know that you trampled on my work. So, Lindsay.
Yes.
We brought you on the show. You're the guest of honor. Of course, there's a dog barking now.
Well, thank you. That's okay. You might hear cats at some point. I'm surprised they haven't started yet.
I don't even have a dog. It's somebody else's dog. we brought you on the show to talk about the upcoming Transformers War for Cybertron, What can you tell us about this project and what's your role in it?
Oh, wow. Well, my role, I am so excited to be playing Alita One. She is a character who has a fairly large role within the comics, the Transformer comics, but within media, animation, you know, video games, I'm sorry, not video games, you know, animation and movies and so forth. She's never had a very substantial role, you know, RC and a lot of the other, you know, fembots, and I hate saying that, it makes me cringe to say that, have had much more prominence than she has. But her story, if you're just looking at the comics, is just so compelling. You know, she is a soldier through and through. She's a leader, and in my personal humble opinion, you know, Optimus wouldn't be where he was without her. You know, I think he learned a lot of what he is known for, you know, his leadership capabilities, a lot of that. I think he learned a lot of that from her. And I will say I love that the show went with a lot of the original source material. I love it whenever shows go back to, because I'm a big comic book fan, and I love it when you can like see things and know, oh, they went back to the original for that, and you see the little Easter eggs, and that's always very exciting for me, because I think it really honors the creators of that you know, franchise or that content or that character or so forth. You know, and I feel like FJ just, he had a vision, and, you know, he was able to bring that vision to light, obviously, with the backing of Hasbro and Rooster Teeth and Netflix. And I really feel like it is going to be a story that people haven't seen before. When I went in for my sessions, I was just like, I was blown away by the writing. It was just, it was dark and it was gritty, and it just felt, you know, it's a fantastical world of robots, and it just felt so grounded to me. And we had, you know, an amazing voice director, Phil Bach, who just pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. And even when you thought you'd given your best performance, he's just like, I think you can do better. I think you got one more. And I think that's, and like, I literally would come out of sessions like crying and sweating, because I'm just like, oh God, what are you doing to me? But I really think it's going to make the difference, because everyone involved in this project, it seems like, just refuse to settle. They're really wanting it to be the best it can be. And you know, the artwork that's coming out of Polygon Production or Polygon Pictures over in Japan is just beautiful. When I saw the first animatic for this, I was like, are you kidding me? I was blown away. So I think fans are going to be really pleased with how this comes out, hopefully. And I'm very honored to be able to bring Alita's story to life, and you know, see her finally kind of further cement her place within, you know, kind of the Transformer pantheon.
And so War for Cybertron, this is the first part of a planned trilogy, right?
Yes, this is a trilogy. Mm-hmm. So we've got three seasons planned.
Okay, three seasons. That was going to be my next question. Like, or how is that going to develop?
Yeah, it's already.
so the trilogy, quote unquote trilogy, is each season is like one entry in the trilogy.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
I was always confused by that. I was like, I don't understand. It says trilogy, but it's a series. What's going on? So thank you for clarifying. That actually helps quite a bit. How long ago did you record your lines for this?
I think it's been at least a year and a half now.
Okay.
Wow.
That's actually, I expected longer, to be honest. I was like,
I've lost track of all time. season one, I think we recorded either a year and a half or 2 years ago, because obviously, you know, and again, you've seen the trailers, and Netflix dropped a bunch of new artwork yesterday. You know, the guys over at Polygon, you know, obviously had to wait for all the voice acting to be completed before they started animating. And, you know, there's just so much detail and richness to this animation that, you know, they really took their time to get it right. And I really appreciate that.
Okay. And where did you guys record this? Like, was it at Rooster Teeth or was it somewhere else?
No, well, those of us who are in LA, we recorded in a studio in LA, and then some of the cast members are in New York, and they recorded remotely from studios in New York. Yeah.
What studio in LA? Just curious.
I mean, it's a local recording studio, you know, where it wasn't, it's not like part of Rooster Teeth's property. It was just a local recording studio where, you know, you run out the space and the director and
gotcha.
The clients all show up. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I was just curious because I was curious, like, because it is, you know, based in, I guess, Austin or whatever, and then sometimes they have LA people, and I was curious just how the logistics of all of that worked.
Rooster Teeth is also here in LA as well. Well, that's the great thing with voiceover these days is you can patch in from anywhere. So yeah, like I said, we had, I think most of the cast was here in LA, but we do have several of the actors in New York, and there might have still been some in Austin, but I think it was mostly New York and LA. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, I look in here at the cast. So, I know Edward Bosco was in LA as well, for sure.
Yeah, and Joe Zizia, who plays Bumblebee, he's here in LA. Mm. And yeah.
Nice. Sorry, Jonesy. Continue.
No, that's fine. So, Lindsay, yeah. I know that you were. You're a veteran and you were in Iraq as well. And I'm just curious. So you talked about Alita as being a warrior and things like that. How much of your experience being a veteran were you able to bring into this character?
Honestly, a lot. And this was actually one of the things that the director and I talked about fairly in depth was the idea that I was really able to tap into a lot of my experiences while I was over there. And, you know, for me, even if you're playing a character that's nothing like you, it's important as a performer to bring authenticity to that character, but to be able to utilize actual experiences that I'd had to be able to try and make Alita as authentic as possible was really important to me. And, you know, the director, you know, Phil and I talked quite a few times, and he's like, look, you know, I'm going to push you and I'm going to ask you to tap into things that might be painful for you. If it gets too much, just let me know. He's like, but I really want to bring that authentic experience to this character. And I was like, let's do it. And he really did. And, you know, it for me, if that, you know, people aren't going to watch the show and be like, oh, obviously that person's a vet. Like, you know, that's not the point of all of this. It's just as an actor being able to use the life experiences that you have in order to best embody whatever character you're playing and to just happen to have it line up where experiences that I've had can really translate into the experiences of this giant robot, because at the end of the day, it's about the storytelling and, you know, war for Cybertron. It's in the title of the show. We are in the middle of a war, and maybe it's a war in outer space with giant robots, but, you know, war is still war, and there is a grit to it, and there is a vulnerability to it, and, you know, a sense of loss that comes with that. And, you know, to be able to tap into those experiences, I hope will at least, you know, bring a layer to that character that will hopefully do her justice.
Okay. And so I'd like to talk a little bit. I'm sorry, go ahead, Jammer.
No, I just did awesome. Go for it. Keep talking. You got this, Kelsey. Awesome. You're doing great.
Yes. So I want to talk a little bit more about your career, but before I moved on from the show, I wanted to ask you, so we've seen, I think, two trailers for this already, and the trailers look really good and really interesting. Like, yeah. Even without talking to you, I was going to watch this, so I just want you to know, I'm pretty excited for this project. It looks really cool. Yeah. Yeah. One of the last things I wanted to ask you about the show was, what can you tell us about the show that wasn't highlighted in the trailers that you think would get people that might not have been apparent from the trailer that would get people to watch? I know, I'm sorry. That's a weird question.
Because I was like, let me tell you about the NDAs I had to sign for this. I can absolutely not give you any plot information whatsoever. I will say, if you are familiar with the comics, I think we really do justice for being able to appeal to fans who are fans of the comics, fans who are, you know, who enjoyed the earlier iterations of Transformers. I will say I feel, and this is really important to me. So many people have said, oh, Transformers, it's a boys franchise. And, you know, I do a lot of work in video games, obviously. And it's like, oh, that's aimed towards men. That's aimed towards boys. And I'm just like, you know what? I feel like there is a real opportunity here to show that Transformers appeals to a wide range of people. And it is not a boys show. Mm. It is not a girls show. It is a show that everybody can enjoy. And yes, this version is going to be pretty dark. If nothing else, the fact that Hasbro and Rooster Teeth and FJ really believed that Alita deserved to have some of her story told, I think really shows that we are in a time period now where production studios and companies are starting to realize that the way in which they were, you know, genderizing their shows is not necessarily the norm anymore. And I really hope that this show can bring in a whole swath of like young girls and women, and people have already been reaching out to me on social media, just so excited that Alita is going to be in it. And it's not just going to be a boys club anymore. I mean, yes, Prime and Bumblebee and Megatron are always going to be the faces of Transformers. But I think for me, if we can get even like one little girl excited about this show, then I think that that's something transformative and new and different that this iteration of Transformers can do that, you know, maybe not all of the previous iterations have done. I mean, and I loved other versions of Transformers as well. Don't get me wrong. But I think that's something that I think people can get excited about. And I think it's a show that, adults and kids will be able to enjoy together. Maybe not super young kids, depending on. And again, I haven't seen the final version, so I've only seen the trailers that you guys have seen. But I think there is a maturity to this show that is really going to appeal to a wide range of ages and audiences. And that's kind of what I'm hoping that people can get excited about.
Yeah. So you actually one, you're about to make a liar out of me, because in talking about, you know, not genderizing shows, I think that Netflix in particular has done a good job of taking properties like Voltron, yes, or She-Ra and, yes, making them very gender neutral. Like I watch both of those shows, agree, and it's interesting. Yeah. Those have come way more towards the middle, where anyone could watch those shows and find, yeah, something to be interested in. Both of my kids, 5 and 4, a boy and a girl, really enjoy both of those. And I enjoyed them as well. And I think that says a lot.
Yeah. And Netflix has been doing a great job. One of my dear friends and former roommate was actually in Voltron, has done a great job of being more inclusive in their storytelling. I mean, you know, you had a gay relationship in Voltron, and She-Ra, you know, you've got speculations about, lesbian relationships and that. And it's really exciting to see that within animation, we're really starting to push the boundaries of trying to be more representative and inclusive of just the variety of people that exist in this world, and showing that, like, you know, within geekdom, everybody belongs. Like, I fully believe that. Like, I am a geek through and through, and I fully believe that regardless of who you are or where you're from, there is a place for you within some fandom somewhere. And it's really exciting. I think it's exciting for people to be able to see themselves represented within a fandom that they're passionate about, or get excited about a fandom because they finally see themselves represented in it. And so that's something, yeah, I agree. I think Netflix has done a really great job of that, and obviously other studios as well.
Sure.
I think animation, to kind of piggyback on what you said, has been really good about giving more representation, mm-hmm, just variety of people, variety of, you know, what's it called, sexualities and stuff. And it's just, yeah, they've been really good about that, even, you know, at stuff aimed at younger kids, which I think is perfect. And yeah, I'm just happy seeing the neutralization of a lot of this stuff. Because I know growing up for me, you know, I'd see something, I'd be like, oh, that's a girl's show or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I like the idea of that sort of not being as much of a thing now. I mean, I don't have kids, so I don't know specifically how true or not it is, but that's my perception as an adult who watches animation. Seems to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
I had a question that was kind of related to some of what you were talking about, highlighting hashtag Be Alita. That's a campaign that you're highlighting.
Oh my God, you guys
different...
looked at my social media. Yeah, it's so fun. So I never really had a huge social media presence. You know, it wasn't something I had time for, anything like that. But when I was recording for this show, I was like, you know what, there is something special here. I think this is going to have the potential to have a really big fandom. And I was really thinking about it. And a dear friend of mine, Jeff Burns, who's, you know, kind of helped me strategize, you know, how to deal with this whole crazy social media thing that all the cool kids are on. You know, social media can be so toxic. It can be such a toxic environment with cyberbullying and trolls and just hate speech and, you know, all the negativity that can come out of social media. I really wanted to see if I could do something that could be positive and uplifting and empowering. And again, because I am just a huge geek, and for me, it's really important to recognize the diverse voices that are within geekdom and that it is not just a boys club. You know, there's just as many girls as anybody else. Maybe they don't talk about it as much because they're embarrassed. And for me, I was like, you know what? Let's highlight all of the badass women that are in all these different fandoms and these franchises. And so I, you know, with Jeff and I, we came up with this Be Alita hashtag and just started making it a daily tweet that I put out that's just highlighting either a female character in comics or, you know, animation or video games or something like that, just to bring to light a lot of the voices and the characters that maybe not everybody is familiar with. I mean, obviously people are going to know who Black Widow and Storm are and things like that, but a lot of the other lesser characters and, you know, and then also making sure to point out characters of different races and different, you know, orientations and things like that to show that there really is a level of inclusivity to be found in some of these different franchises that maybe people aren't aware of. And if they still think that, oh, it's, you know, comic books are just for nerdy boys, it's like, no, there's entire franchises that are just got amazing female characters in and got, you know, LGBTQ+ characters in them and just, you know, people of color and different religions. And it's just it's been really encouraging to me and just wanting to see, you know, not that many people follow me on social media, but if they do, you know, I've actually gotten some really sweet notes from some people on Twitter saying like, you know, thank you so much for these tweets. Like I share them with my daughter and she's just so excited about this. And now we're really excited to see Transformers because we see the type of messages that you're putting out. And I was like, you know, that's what this was about, is just, you know, trying to highlight all the amazing characters that are out there, and of course all the creators who have created these people over the years, you know, recognizing their work. Because for me, I feel like social media can really be at its best when it's being utilized to highlight other people's accomplishments and other people's achievements. And, you know, so that's kind of exciting for me. And I've been able to research like some of these different things that I didn't know about. And I was like, wait, there's a character that could do this? That's amazing. What?
That's super cool.
Yeah. You know, with that in mind, like do you have a particular character that you grew up with that was like a big idol for you that really inspired you to kind of, I guess, come up with that hashtag?
That is a really good question. I mean, There's quite a few. I will say, like, the past 10 years, Captain Marvel's had a really soft spot in my heart. I love her. I mean, I liked Ms. Marvel as well, but I really love what Kelly Sue DeConnick did with the Captain Marvel reboot. She just, it's not even a reboot. Like, she essentially turned, I mean, she took Ms. Marvel and made her Captain Marvel. And I was like, when I first read the comic, I was like, she's a vet. She's a badass. She's the most powerful Avenger. I don't care what other people argue. She's the most powerful Avenger. And she is a geek. She loves Star Wars. And when the movie came out, I was so devastated that they changed the cat's name from Chewie. I was like, no, you don't understand, Captain Marvel. She's a Star Wars geek. And I was like, I love this woman so much. So that's been a big one for me. And then, you know, what they did with Jane Foster when, you know, she took over the Thor mantle, and Marvel was very explicit about being like, she's not Lady Thor, she's not She Thor, she is just Thor, and showing that, like, you can have an iconic character and it doesn't matter what their gender is. And then when we started seeing, like, Kamala Khan come out, I was like, what? This is fantastic. And now she's going to hopefully be added into the MCU. And it's just, there's a lot out there that just really excites me. And to even see how within comics artwork has changed. You know, you look at a lot of the classic comic books and it's, you know, you've got your sexy thongs and thigh highs and whatever it was. And now it's like Captain Marvel's wearing a pretty practical outfit. And then one of the latest comic series I read was the Stumptown series. And I was like, this woman is, she doesn't have superpowers. She's totally flawed. She's a multi-tour Afghanistan vet. She's a hot mess. But she, you know, she helps bring people to justice in her own kind of way. And it's been very exciting to see where comics have come over the years. And, you know, yeah, as a kid, like, I loved the original X-Men. Rogue was my girl, you know, the animated series, the comics. I love that girl. And just to see where things were and where things are today, and just how much I feel like comics and, you know, the geek world in general is just so much more inclusive now. And I really hope we keep moving forward in that direction. It seems like we really are. I mean, especially Marvel, you know, with giving us Captain Marvel and giving us Black Panther, and now hopefully bringing Kamala Khan into the MCU. I think it's a lot of steps in the right direction for us.
Agreed. Yeah, fingers crossed. Like, always forward, never back.
Especially in the past decade ago.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
that's all I have for now. Yeah, I feel bad because, like, you answer over the course of your discussions, like, you kind of just touched on a lot of the questions that I had. So, like, I've kind of just been sitting back and listening and enjoying it. So,
well, I mean, I will let you guys in on a little secret. I used to be a journalist. I actually have a master's degree in journalism from UC Berkeley. Yeah. So, like, I sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm giving an interview. Great. All of your questions are already, like, in the back of my head.
Well, I also have really boring questions, and I'm like, I'm interested, but I don't know if any other people are. Like, for example, you know, I'm gonna ask this question. Screw it. So, like, do you mentioned how you could be patched in, because I'm always curious about doing stuff remotely as a voice actor and how you, like, are you working with a director? Like, how does that process work remotely?
Yeah. So, if I'm doing an actual patched in remote session, absolutely, the director is in my headphones directing me as we go. You know, I was doing home sessions for my home studio for years before quarantine, but since quarantine, it's picked up a lot more. And whereas traditionally it was normally just like commercials and narration, now I have been doing dubbing projects from home and video games from home. And 100%, the directors, you know, my computer is connected to their computer and he's in my headphones, and, you know, the engineer is running the session, and I'm, you know, because they can, you know, basically we're connecting studios. And I'll run a backup and so forth. But yeah, they're in your headphones. And because it is an audible medium, you don't have to see each other. I mean, it's always great to be like, you know, hey, what's up, Phil, and see in person. But, you know, to be able to just hear them works just as well. Yeah.
How does this is a really annoyingly specific question. Like, yeah. Cause I mean, I'm sure you're very, like I'm assuming tech savvy cause you had to set up everything.
Yeah.
So like,
yeah.
Do they give you specific instructions like on how you need to set up your microphone for a specific thing? So everything sounds consistent between the voice actor.
So, modern day voiceover, if you are working from home, you do kind of have to learn how to become an engineer. I wish there was someone who could just be like, these are all the steps you have to take. And here's how you do it. It was literally trial and error for me over the years. There are some amazing people out there that I would reach out to for help and found a lot of YouTube walkthrough videos. But the truth is, you know, every studio is different. For the most part, the setup I've had has been great for everything. I do know in some instances, some of the major animation studios and even some of the video game studios were sending out microphone packages to the talent to be able to record from at home so they could have consistency with the sound. Yeah, because every room sounds different. Every microphone sounds different. And you can fix a lot of it in post-production and editing. So, you know, with a commercial, it's not a big deal. It's just your voice and some mixing. But when you are getting into full video games and animated series, you do want some consistency in that. And with the quarantine, we have seen some studios who are doing that. For the most part, I've been using my setup. You know, I usually do a test with the studio to see if I pass their muster. And thankfully, you know, got the green light from all the studios that I was working with, because, you know, recording studios are slowly opening back up for sessions. Mm-hmm. But I know a lot of voice actors are still very concerned that they're not 100% comfortable going into studio until there's a vaccine, just because our lungs are our lives. You know, it's like, I can't work if I even get a bout of hay fever because it changes the sound of my voice. And if I book something based on that sound, I might not be able to recreate that sound a week later when my hay fever's cleared up. So,
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I'm glad to see that, you know, because I was in LA for a bit. And when I was in LA, I knew a bunch of voice actors. I knew someone who had like a home studio and I thought that was so cool, but I never asked. I don't know why I never asked. Just that whole process of doing business, you know, over remotely when you have all the different variables and such. And that was
you definitely, you learn how to be an engineer. You talk to people who are smarter than you. You have to do your research and reach out to people. And you know, I do the same thing. Like, you know, my old roommate texted me the other day and was like, hey, I heard you got this new piece of equipment. What is it again? What does it do? Do you like it? And I was like, oh yeah. And here's the name of this engineer that I, you know, had a consult with to just test the sound of my studio and see if he had any tweaks. And so like, especially within all the quarantine, like it's a pretty tight knit community here, at least in LA, of the voiceover community. And all of us have just really been like helping and supporting each other. And if one person has experience with one type of microphone or one piece of equipment and just sharing those experiences. And, you know, I'm thankful that I'm in an area that is very quiet and I, you know, have a home studio, but, you know, friends of mine who are in very noisy apartment complexes and trying to help them figure out the best way to set up a studio when they don't exactly have the best environment for it. And it's really been great to see how, the community has always been pretty tight knit, but how the community's really come together to help people out. And, you know, just because we're all in this together, this is strange, uncharted times. And the industry all over the place is really changing and shifting. And it's really good to see that at least within this niche part of the industry, people have really just come together and helped each other out.
Right. Good stuff. Thank you for the answer. That sufficiently answered exactly what I was wondering about.
Awesome.
Good. So, well, Lindsay, first of all, I just want to say thanks again for coming on the show. We jammer not. Yeah. Well, I'll speak for myself. I've had a great time speaking with you.
Thanks for having me, guys. Happy. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it really was. One of the things we like to do is give the folks that come on the show an opportunity to say, hey, this is where I can be found. This is the project that I have coming up. And so I know you said you had a small social media following, but please, you know, let the listeners know where you can be found so they can follow you.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I am on Twitter and Instagram, Lindsay Rousseau, LINSAY. No D, and then the French spelling, Rousseau, not the Italian spelling, two syllables, not one. It's okay. Everyone gets it wrong. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. I'm not mad. Yeah. So I'm Lindsay Rousseau on Twitter and Instagram. And then I also am a producer and a streamer for the D&D network Fabled 42. So you can see me streaming Dungeons and Dragons, multiple times a month. I think it's, I'm going to get this wrong. The second and fourth Monday of the month, the first Sunday of the month, the third Sunday of the month, and the first and third Friday of the month. I'm not sure. It's on our website, wow. Fabled 42. Yeah. So that's kind of my other, that's taken over my life during quarantine was, this D&D network that I work with. And, you know, we're constantly, expanding our content. So yeah, you can find me on there. So if you're a fan of D&D or Middle Earth, you know, come check out our streams. They're always exciting. And you can join our Discord channel as well. Yeah. And if anybody has questions or anything like that, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter or my Facebook page or my Facebook profile, not profile, my Facebook fan page, or Instagram or whatever. And I try to get back to people when I can. And, you know, I'm always happy to answer questions and just chat with cool people.
Awesome. And so next we'll be able to hear, well, I was going to say hear your voice in the upcoming Netflix show, Transformers. And that's going to be debuting on 30 July, right?
Yes. Yep. July 30th, it will drop. And I have a couple other things in development that I can't talk about, but I've got some video games that'll be coming out eventually when I can talk about them. I'll talk about them. Yeah. And if you want to check out any other things I've done, you know, Fallout 76 or Rage 2 or NBA 2K20 or Hearthstone, you know. Yeah.
Lots of good stuff.
Lots of stuff.
Awesome. Cool. And hopefully we'll be able to bring you back on the show and talk about those things that you can't talk about now.
I know. Or talk about the, you know, the show once it airs. Yeah, exactly. That's the hardest thing about this industry is like, everyone's like, oh, cool. What are you doing? It's like, you know, all of my on-camera friends are like, yeah, I just shot this episode. And I was like, I probably can't talk about it for 2 years. So I'll tell you then if I even remember what it was by then.
Voiceover stuff sucks because you have to not only stay silent. They're, I feel like voiceover seems, unless it's like a Marvel, like a live action movie, I feel like live action, you generally don't have as many NDAs as animation or like voiceover stuff. It's crazy.
Oh my God. Course, video games are probably the most intense. They are so protective because they don't want any other company to jump the gun on them. So it's like we're signing our lives away for a lot of these. I mean, I was sitting on Transformers for a year and a half before I could talk about it when they finally announced it at New York Toy Fair. And that's only the cast who was announced who can talk about it. So there's a whole swath of people who worked on the show who haven't been announced yet. So they still can't talk about it. And yeah, and video games, because they're in development for so long, it's like you literally forget about half the projects you worked on until it's like it pops up on your IMDb and you're like, oh, I did that. That's right.
I just imagine it's like it gets announced. You're just like, you know, I'm not even excited about it anymore. I've gone through that. I've gone through those emotions already.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it was great talking with you guys. Thank you so much. This was a pleasure.
Yeah, definitely. Most definitely. And so I think we can leave it there. And dear listeners, if you like what you heard, just do all the socials, like, rate, comment, subscribe. We would definitely appreciate it. Also, LRM Online has other great programs for your listening pleasure, and you can find those programs on LRM Online, as well as other great content for your reading pleasure.
I will check that out now.
Yes. Got another follower.
Yay!
Jammer, where can the good people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at JamTheWriter, and you can find all of my stuff at LRM Online. I'm laughing right now because we had an incident. I released a book recently. my cover was plagiarized by our artist, so we had to take it down temporarily, and we're gonna put it back up soon. Oh yeah, it was a South Korean artist, and they plagiarized the cover.
Oh my God.
So that's a thing. I'll be sure to plug
book
that
relaunch
back out. Yeah, relaunch.
Relaunch. Like, yeah, that's right.
Fine too, but yeah, next week it'll probably pop up again. But it's still available on Audible if you want it. God mode, it looks pretty cool. I mean, it is pretty cool, I guess. It doesn't just look cool.
It looks pretty cool.
Well, I mean, it's going to have
it's a great book. It looks cool. You know, that's a very interesting way to describe a book.
You know, it looks cool. the narrator does a great job, and the writing, I could take it or leave it.
And when you say it looks cool, you just said that the cover was plagiarized. So what exactly are we talking
about? Exactly.
That doesn't make it less cool just because it's plagiarized. It's still a cool looking cover, okay?
Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Man. And you can find me on Twitter at Sir Jonesius, contributing to LRM Online, and of course, right here on Breaking Geek Radio, the podcast. Folks, as always, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on the next one. Hasta lasagna.
Don't get any on you. I hate you make me do this. I don't even like Mission Impossible that much.
I don't make you do anything. It's the fact that Nick isn't here that makes you have to do it.
Yeah.